Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to The Cross in the Desert, speaking hope and freedom to Iran. I'm your host, Randy L. Noble, and thank you once again for taking just a little bit out of your busy life to join me on the radio program today. We are continuing my book, Full Moon Over Loch Ness. This is every Thursday on The Cross in the Desert, and we're headed into the heart of the book right now, Chapter 5, where my main characters' lives intersect. Here in Inverness, Scotland, an atheist meets a Christian. Two worldviews collide in Scotland. And so if you've been with us, you know what's going on in the book. Dr. Jeffrey Hughes is off to Inverness, Scotland to investigate a serial killer and crimes going on there. But he also wants to stay at his particular bed and breakfast, and he wants to write the story of a family who has lost their daughter. She has disappeared and is presumed to be a victim of the Full Moon Loch Ness serial killer. So a lot is happening here, but most importantly, these two worldviews are about to collide. We're going to go right now to Chapter 5. We have a lot to cover, and hopefully today I can get that done for you. Chapter 5, Inverness. Jeffrey Hughes squinted his eyes from the bright rays of the morning sunshine beaming in his face. He marveled at the beauty of the Scottish Highlands, the green fern trees growing tall and majestic against the mountain range surrounding the city of Inverness. The city of Inverness was a new, booming city, tucked away in the beauty of the Scottish Highlands and only a distance of 6 miles from the famous Loch Ness. Since its inception in the year 2000, Inverness had grown to a population of more than 60,000 people. It was a major tourist attraction with its historic castles, museums, art galleries, and botanical gardens. The name Inverness was derived from the fact that the city was located at the mouth of the River Ness. The main attraction in the Scottish city that drew tourists was the many islands that were accessible along the banks of the river. The beautiful Scotch pine trees and the many Victorian footbridges provides a relaxing escape perfect for a quiet and peaceful picnic by the riverside. The Inverness railway station was buzzing with the sound of many tourists disembarking from ScotRail and taking cabs to their destination. The station was quite modern with the latest technology featuring video screens showing departures and arrivals and 7 platforms to connect with the rail system. It was 6:05 a.m. Geoffrey had slept most of the journey from Edinburgh and had awakened refreshed today. He was eager to catch a brief glimpse of the city on his way to the Mackenzie's bed and breakfast. Using the Google feature on his cell phone, Geoffrey observed that the station was located on Margaret Street. He reached to take a taxi to Castle Street, which paralleled the suspension bridge that crossed over the River Ness. Grabbing a quick breakfast, consisting of a donut and a hot cup of coffee, Geoffrey noticed a new line of cabs pulling up in front of the railway station. Geoffrey grabbed his portable luggage cart and began quickly pushing it through the automatic doors into the bright sunshine of his first morning at Inverness. "Taxi, taxi," Geoffrey yelled with one hand on his portable cart and the other hand signaling excitedly in the air. The driver pulled around some parked vehicles and stopped right in front of Geoffrey. He quickly exited the driver's side and helped Geoffrey collapse his portable carrier and get him comfortably seated. "Good morning, sir. Are you new to our city?" "Yes, sir, I am. I just arrived from Edinburgh. I'm from Atlanta," Geoffrey replied, ducking down and climbing into the back seat of the taxi. The driver sat back down behind the steering wheel and gazed back at Geoffrey. "Welcome to Scotland, the home of Nessie, the famous monster of the Loch Ness," the taxi driver proudly announced with a chuckle and a bright smile on his face. "Where can I take you this morning?" "Castle Road," Geoffrey answered, leaning back in his seat to relax. "You've got it, mate. Here we go." The taxi sped away from the railway station and drove around the loop toward the hub of the city. This morning was Monday, April 11th, in the beautiful city by the River Ness. In a few weeks, the busy tourist season would officially begin. The month of May through July brought much warmer weather and thousands of tourists from all over the world. Until May, the weather remained cooler with temperatures in the mid-50s and low 60s. Today, the sun was beaming sharply through the scattered white clouds with a cool breeze and the temperature only 52 degrees. Springtime had officially arrived 2 weeks earlier, and the flowers in the trees were blossoming with magnificent colors all across the Scottish landscape. Geoffrey peered out the passenger window to catch a glimpse of a mighty Gothic fortress sitting atop the banks of the River Ness. It was the Inverness Castle, surrounded by three large green Scottish pine trees, shadowing its ancient walls with its bulging limbs. The castle sat atop the bank looking down at the river with its red sandstone walls built in 1836 by architect William Burns. The taxi turned onto the main city street road, revealing a sleeping city just waking up to greet the day. Geoffrey watched as a few tourists were enjoying breakfast under an umbrella at one of the outdoor cafes. In the distance was a large structure known as the City Museum and Art Gallery. It was one of the sites that Geoffrey was anxious to visit. He knew that he would be spending hours there admiring the classic artwork and studying the history of Scotland. As the taxi rounded another city block, Geoffrey gazed ahead and was captivated by the majestic sight of a suspension bridge towering more than 100 feet in the sky with its beautifully designed arches and providing a breathtaking walkway across the River Ness. In the distance, on the other side of the bank, stood the towering pointed brick steeple of the old Church High. Geoffrey glanced down at his tablet and looked at the address of the bed and breakfast. 1166 Castle Drive is my destination," Geoffrey shouted out towards the driver. "Yes, sir," the driver responded, turning the corner and stopping at a red light. After a few moments, the light changed green and the taxi made a sharp turn onto Castle Drive. Sandwiched in between a local grocery store and a pub stood the two-story brick building named Mackenzie Bed and Breakfast. The taxi driver pulled up to the curb and stopped, turning off his engine. Geoffrey quickly pulled out his credit card from his wallet and handed it to the driver to pay the fare. The cool morning breeze greeted Geoffrey in the face as he exited the taxi. Grabbing his luggage bag, he climbed up the short flight of steps and knocked on the front door. After a few moments, the front door slowly opened and a tall, blonde-haired girl, wearing a warm smile and holding on to a cane in her right hand, answered. "Good morning, sir," The young girl greeted Jeffrey with a smile and a jubilant tone in her voice. Jeffrey couldn't move or say a word in response. He was astonished as he stared intently into the young girl's beautiful green eyes. Her hair, her smile, her tone of voice, everything immediately reminded him of Allison. Jeffrey was speechless. Another lady suddenly appeared behind the young girl. She was much older, with thick gray hair, wearing glasses, and dressed in a pink housecoat. "Good morning, Mr. The lady said, stuttering. "Jeffrey Hughes," Jeffrey responded with a mesmerized look on his face. He couldn't take his eyes off of the young girl. It was as if he was staring into the face of his daughter, back from the dead. "Dr. Jeffrey Hughes," the young girl excitedly exclaimed, cupping her hands over her mouth, "the famous American writer?" "Yes, yes, that's me," Jeffrey replied, still staring at the young girl in astonishment. "My name is Grace, Grace McKenzie," Grace replied, opening the door wider to let Jeffrey in. "Please come in, sir." Grace gazed into Jeffrey's eyes and carefully scrutinized every detail of his face and hands. She couldn't believe how similar Jeffrey looked like her father Bryce, his shiny bald head, the style of his glasses, the tiny mustache neatly trimmed underneath his nose. "Welcome to our bed and breakfast. My name is Flora. I'm Grace's mother," Flora said with an excited expression on her face. She, too, was mesmerized by how similar Jeffrey looked like her late husband. Jeffrey stepped through the entrance and noticed a tall, cherry-colored traditional grandfather clock standing in the corner, softly ticking the minutes away with a gold pendulum swinging in a glass-covered case. Adjacent to the clock was a stairway or a staircase leading up to the upper floors. A tall green-colored palm plant stood near the staircase, and there were pictures of famous Inverness castles decorating the wall next to the front entrance. Grace carefully walked toward Jeffrey, taking slow steps with her black cane. Her face was plush red with excitement. "I can't believe it, Mother. We have a famous author staying with us." Jeffrey was overwhelmed with Grace's kindness as she sat his luggage down. Flora quickly approached him and offered to carry his personal belongings. "Thank you kindly, ma'am," Jeffrey said in gratitude. He gazed into Grace's green eyes, still spellbound by how much she resembled Allison. "I want to thank both of you for your great hospitality at such a difficult time," Jeffrey said in a respectful tone. "I want to offer you both my deepest condolences and wishes for a safe return of your dear daughter, your dear sister." Flora smiled with a look of gratitude on her face. She put her arm around Grace, hugging her. "Thank you, Mr. Hughes, for your kind words. We are both trusting in the Lord to bring Fiona back to us." Grace looked up at her mother, her eyes beaming with joy. Then she stared intently toward Jeffrey. "Mr. Hughes, God is faithful. He will bring my sister back to me." Jeffrey noticed tears began to well up in Grace's eyes. "Come on, Mr. Hughes. We will show you to your room." Following slowly behind Flora and Grace, Jeffrey climbed up the short staircase to the second floor. Together, they walked down a short corridor until arriving at the last room next to a window that gave a picturesque view of the city. Flora inserted a key and opened the door. She walked in first, carrying Jeffrey's luggage, and carefully set it down in the corner next to the plush king-size bed, stylishly decorated with burgundy-colored covers. Jeffrey carefully gazed around his room. In front of the bed was an electric fireplace, and right above it was a flat-screen television. There was a colored brown recliner chair positioned in front of the fireplace with a small cherry-colored table sitting next to it. A few feet from the bed was a sliding door that led outside to a small deck. Toward the front of the room was a dresser with an artificial attached mirror where Jeffrey could freshen up and shave before taking a shower. Next to the dresser was a small table with a coffee pot and a microwave. Jeffrey walked toward the bed and gently sat down on the edge, patting the center of it with his left hand. He looked toward Grace and Flora with an excited look on his face. "This is absolutely wonderful. What a cozy room you have." Jeffrey leaned back and relaxed on the bed. He sighed with satisfaction. "Wonderful. So relaxing." "We're so glad you are pleased, Mr. Hughes," Grace said as she walked toward the sliding doors and opened them up. The rays of the mid-morning sun beamed through the curtains onto the bed. Jeffrey quickly got out of the bed and joined Grace on the deck. He looked toward the horizon and spotted the suspension bridge over the River Ness in the distance. Then he looked down at the traffic below. "I can't believe it. I'm going to like it here. It's the perfect place to write my new book." Grace stared up at Jeffrey. "You are writing a new book?" Grace asked with excitement in her voice. "Yes, Grace. It's very different from any of my other books. I want to use my, I guess you can call them, my detective skills and try to find the monster who is terrorizing your wonderful city." "Speaking of books, Dr. Hughes, can I show you a very special place that I go to every day to read?" Grace asked, taking hold of his hand and walking out of the room. "Why, yes, of course, Grace, and please call me Jeffrey." Grace smiled in gratitude and gently led Jeffrey out of his room, moving slowly toward the staircase with her cane in her right hand. Jeffrey looked up, admiring the tall bookshelves towering above his head and almost reaching to the ceiling. The shelves were filled with books of all sizes and shapes. In the center of the plush room was a large brown and cherry-colored desk with a black cushion, high-back swivel chair. On the desk were photographs of Grace and her mother Fiona. Near the edge of the desk, toward the left corner, was a tiny lamp, and across from the glow of the light was a large picture frame. Grace reached across the desk and picked up the picture frame, holding it tightly against her chest. Her eyes began to fill with tears. She closed her eyes for a moment and whispered something very softly. Then she held out the picture for Jeffrey to see. "This was Bryce, my father." Jeffrey carefully took the picture from Grace's hands, admiring it. "A very handsome fellow," Jeffrey observed with a tone of respect in his voice. He then gently handed the picture back to Grace. Grace stared intently at her father's picture. She was totally captivated by every detail of it. After a few moments, she looked back up at Jeffrey. Jeffrey, Grace said with a chuckle, "I can't help but notice how very much you look like my father. I don't mean to embarrass you, but you have his deep black colored eyes, his shiny bald head, and you are both the same height. And you share writing in common with him." Jeffrey was flattered and didn't know how to respond. "Your father was a writer?" "Yes, sir, he was," Grace proudly said, reaching toward the bookshelf and pulling out a dusty hardcover book. She brushed off the dust with her right hand and flipped through the pages. "He was a historian, Jeffrey. He wrote about every facet of Scottish history." "That's very impressive," Jeffrey replied, taking the book from Grace's hands and flipping through the pages. "I miss him so much," Grace said with sadness in her eyes. "He died from cancer 5 years ago." "I'm terribly sorry, Grace," Jeffrey said in a sympathetic tone, handing the book back to Grace. "Thank you." Grace bowed her head in despair. "I miss him the most at high school. This is my graduation year. I will really, really miss him," Grace lamented. "Sir, you mentioned when we first met that it was a wonderful surprise to have an American author at your bed and breakfast. So do I take it that I have fans of my book right here in Scotland? Have you ever read my books, Grace?" Grace's face beamed with joy once again. "You are right, Jeffrey. You do have fans here in Scotland. And yes, I have read your newest book about religious superstition and the progress of modern science." Jeffrey relaxed and felt at ease once again. I would be very interested in your opinion, Grace. Grace took a nervous deep breath and cleared her throat. She looked deep in thought. After a few moments, she composed herself and looked at Jeffrey intently in his eyes. I don't see Christianity as a religious superstition at all, Jeffrey. I don't believe it's based on myths or fairy tales, but instead is an accurate and realistic view of the world and all of life. Jeffrey leaned up against the desk, listening intently to every one of Grace's words. As a matter of fact, religious faith or Christianity is not at all opposed to modern science, but instead it supports it. Sir Francis Bacon, one of the pioneers of the modern scientific method, was himself a deeply committed Christian, and he saw no contradiction between his faith and science. Grace's answer took Jeffrey by surprise. He was not prepared to hear such a well-thought-out reply. Christianity is not an outdated superstition, but rather it's a love relationship with God through Christ. The Bible is not a superstitious book of myths, but rather a collection of love letters from the God of irresistible love, who is patiently calling his people back to a relationship with him once again. He is the God who heals broken relationships with his irresistible love. Jeffrey rubbed his chin with his hand deep in thought, carefully plotting on how to respond. I see, Jeffrey answered, murmuring to himself. I want to thank you, Grace, for reading my book and thinking carefully through the issues. Jeffrey walked toward the bookcase where Grace was standing. She was busy picking up a paperback book from off the shelf. I would simply point out that there are, of course, many opinions of how life came about and how modern science interprets reality. For me, I'm quite content with the evolutionary scenario. I don't have a problem with believing that life is the result of pure chance, a cosmic accident billions of years ago. I think it's much easier to believe that scenario than sifting through the many theological and philosophical debaters. Grace looked up at Jeffrey and put the book back on the shelf. I understand, Jeffrey. You are committed to a naturalistic worldview that doesn't allow for the possibility of miracles. However, I would point out that when you look at the complexity of life, it is very evident that millions of years of evolution cannot account for the marvelous design that we see in nature. Most scientists today are abandoning Darwin's theory of natural selection in favor of intelligent design. When they look under the microscope at the simplest bacterial cell, it becomes apparent how complex that life form really is. The DNA molecule is filled with encoded information in alphabetical form with a much detailed information that it could fill an entire library. This could not be the result of some cosmic force of evolution over millions of years, but instead, the DNA molecule screams out. It is strong evidence for an intelligent designer. Jeffrey remembered back to a time when his best friend had totally surprised him in a brutal fencing match and scored a blow to his chest to win. At this moment, Jeffrey was feeling the same way with Grace's answer. He was astounded by her wealth of knowledge, but most importantly, he was impressed by the respectful way she carried herself. He was used to most Christians arrogantly attacking him, and even though they had given him good answers, he had dismissed them because of their attitude. But Grace was different. She spoke with authority and treated him with dignity and respect. Jeffrey composed himself and began scanning the books on the shelf, contemplating a good reply to Grace. After a few moments, he turned and looked back at Grace. Grace, I want to commend you for the hard work and study that you have put into discussing all these important issues. Grace blushed. Her face began turning red as she searched for the right words to say. Thank you, Jeffrey. You are very kind, but I cannot take the credit for my knowledge. Grace pulled out a softcover book from the shelf and handed it to Jeffrey. Jeffrey looked intently at the front cover. Everything that I believe, I have learned from the great apologist, C.S. Lewis. Jeffrey looked down at the cover and began flipping the pages. Mere Christianity is my all-time favorite book, the book that you are holding right now in your hands. Jeffrey stopped flipping through the pages and stared back at Grace. Grace's eyes were filled with awe and wonder as she began to speak about her favorite author. C.S. Lewis was really a genius. In fact, Jeffrey, he was once like you, an atheist. There were two life-changing events in his life that caused him to leave his faith and become an atheist. The most difficult trial in his childhood was watching his mother die of cancer. Years later, he enlisted in World War I and returned home injured and despaired. He could not conceive of there being a God with so much evil and suffering in the world. Jeffrey nodded his head, agreeing with the conclusion that C.S. Lewis had after he returned home from the war. But later, all that changed with some good friends. J.R. Tolkien, being one of them, persuaded him of the truth claims of Christ and the Christian faith. Jeffrey handed Grace back the book. Grace grasped the book in her hand and pulled it up against her chest in admiration. One of my favorite quotes from C.S. Lewis that has been such an inspiration in my life was when he said, quote, "I believe in Christianity as I believe that the sun has risen, not only because I see it, but because by it I see everything else." Flora suddenly appeared in the study and stood at the doorway. "I'm sorry if I interrupted you both, but tea and shortbread is now being served in the dining room." Wow, there is so much going on here. The respect and the dignity that Grace shows Jeffrey is in itself an incredibly powerful witness. When we are talking to those that oppose our Christian worldview, the Bible commands us to do it with gentleness and respect. 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 15 says, "Be always ready to give to everyone an answer for the hope that lies within you, but do it with gentleness and respect." The other thing that's going on here in this chapter, very, very unique, is that Jeffrey is amazed how much Grace looks like his daughter. And Grace is amazed how much Jeffrey looks like her father. You can see what's going on here. God has providentially arranged for these two to meet. And as a bonus, both of them look like people that they have loved in their life, people who are now deceased and have died. I wrote this chapter deliberately that way because I wanted this relationship to not only be based on the Christian worldview, but based on that common love and respect for each other and how each other of them reminds them of someone they loved and lost in a tragedy. So this is going to be a very interesting read. For the rest of my time here on Thursday, you are going to be given an incredible treat to watch how this relationship between Grace and Jeffrey develop. And through this relationship, you are going to learn how to talk to an atheist, how to treat the unbeliever with kindness and respect, but yet make your points. And I hope that this book that we're reading together will be just the right book you can give your atheist friend. If you want to hear this book and to read it in detail, to read it carefully, quietly on your own, all you need to go is go up to Amazon.com, and you can purchase my book, Full Moon Over Loch Ness, The Mystery Solved. Full Moon Over Loch Ness, Randy L. Noble, N-O-B-L-E. I want to thank you today for listening to this very important chapter. Now, next Thursday, we're going to continue and conclude Chapter 5. And I'll be discussing much more about what's going on in this very special relationship between an atheist and a Christian. You can look at it this way. If you pray, God may just bring an atheist friend into your life that you can use the the principles from my book to talk to them about the Christian worldview. God bless you. Thank you for joining me. I will see you next Monday on the Cross in the Desert.